This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending Friday the 5th of August 2022. Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the Hampshire Chronicle from the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper. Our readers today are Vara Williams.
Hello.
Richard Martin.
Hello.
And Claire Porter.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter for this week, Peter Lydiard. Well, we begin now with our usual regular notices. The first is to say, if you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with a recording that you've received from us, please telephone Liz Legrisse. Contact number is on the key fob attached to the memory stick. As you listen to your recording, remember you can use the buttons on your box to move on from an item before it finishes or back to any of the tracks if you want to listen again. And for those of you with computers or tablets, as well as using your memory stick in the box, you can also use it on your computer or tablet, or you can access the weekly recording of the Chronicle through our website, which is www.winchestertalkingnews.com. Just go to the website, click on News on the header bar, and locate the recording that you want to hear, and click Download. Now, our headline stories for this week are Too Many Students, Plan for Former Care Home to be Almshouses, County hit by hosepipe ban and revamp of King's Walk. And can we have the first story, please, Vara?
Yes. Too many students, say estate residents. Enough is enough. That's the message from Winnell residents who fear their lives could be tipped upside down if proposals for a new 158-bed block of student accommodation are approved. Plans are under consideration for a huge development for housing and offices spanning 2,100 square metres on the corner of Winnell Manor Road and Winnell Valley Road. It would be the fifth student block locally, alongside Erasmus Park, Balfour House, the Cavendish and Super Uni housing. Concerned locals say the area is rapidly falling foul of studentification and have called for action by the City Council. Ron Frampton, 73, has lived in Winnell Manor Road for 13 years. He suffers from PTSD due to his military background, which saw him serve in Bosnia, and said feral students are making his life a misery. What Winnell desperately needs is a park and ride, and that site would have been ideal for it, he said. It doesn't take the brains of an archbishop to see that with the existing blocks, you're potentially looking at 700 students all living in this small part of Winnell. It's just not right. Students just don't care about the residents who live here. They walk down the middle of the road in fours and fives, never get out of anybody's way, and aren't at all considerate with the noise they're making at night. The people who make these decisions aren't from round here. They don't know what it's like. Mr. Frampton lives next to an HMO rented to students and says he's often woken by loud music and slamming doors. He also says he's smelt former tenants smoking marijuana in the garden, which he says exacerbates his lung condition. Current City Councillor for St Bartholomew, Kathleen Becker, said the idea behind the proposed block was to get students out of HMOs, that's houses under multiple occupation,
correct,
isn't it? Yes. And reclaim those properties for families. However, Mr Frampton insists it will only worsen the issue. Sue Holbury, 76, spent 38 years working for the NHS and almost 50 living in Winnell. She said her neighbour is desperate to get out. We bought our house knowing it was on the edge of an industrial estate, and that's fair dues, she said. But leave it as an industrial estate. Don't turn it into a student village. That's not what we signed up for. Sam Feltham, who lives in Whittle and ran as a Conservative candidate at the May elections, has started a petition against the plans. He's been handing out leaflets to residents who say they weren't properly informed about the plans. So far, 157 residents have backed the petition. He says, "This most recently proposed student accommodation goes against the Whittle planning framework, the aim of which was to maximise opportunities for active lifestyles and to provide services that made communities attractive and safe places to live. There are a lot of inconsiderate students, and I guess that's partly because they're in and out. They live here for a year and then move on. One of the things I'm really concerned about is if they do start to come this much further with the student accommodation blocks, what's to say developers aren't going to start approaching all the other industrial units?" A report supporting the application said, "The Winchester School of Art, in conjunction with the University of Southampton, intend to redevelop and expand their campus in the coming years. Increased investment and development into the campuses will lead to a growing student population in need of accommodation." In a previous response to objections regarding River Park proposals and the number of students in the city, the university said, "The increased number of students who may study in the city may lead to concerns regarding housing. The university is clear that appropriate provision must be made off-site." A planning application was lodged by Merlion Capital Limited on December the 20th, and the time allowed for objecting expired on March the 3rd.
Thank you, Vara. Now, Richard apparently has a plan for a former care home.
Yes, indeed, Peter, to turn them into almshouses. A former care home in Winchester could be turned into almshouses if plans are approved by the City Council. Moorside in Derngate was a care home which specialised in dementia before it closed last September. Its operator, St John's Winchester, was unable to support its high operating costs. St John's Chief Executive, Clive Cook, has submitted a planning application to convert the building into 18 almshouses. The plans say that the almshouses will consist of 15 one-bed, 3 two-bed and 1-bed staff apartment. Clive Cook, St John's Chief Executive, said St John's is now embarked on a period of expansion to further build our almshouse base and add a range of vital new services for existing residents and the older people in the wider local community. On the planning statement it said, "An additional lift will be required, which will be added to an existing stair tower. The lift overrun would not be any higher than the ridgeline of the existing building. The external appearance will remain substantially the same, with the exception of the rear elevation, which will accommodate the new lift. Undercover storage for 6 bicycles will be provided in a purpose-built structure to the rear of the existing building. The use of Moorside as a nursing home providing care for those living with dementia ceased in September 2021, as it was not economically viable to continue operating. The home has always been heavily subsidised due to its limited capacity and the need to staff it appropriately to provide the standards of good care St John's was committed to. The board of St John's Winchester made the decision to close the care home because to continue at the same level of subsidy with declining income would have ultimately threatened the other operations of the charity. These included the provision of registered care and welfare support to approximately 100 almshouses residents and the hand-in-hand service, which since its inception in November 2018 has helped over 300 older people living in the community. A public comment supporting the application has been published on Winchester City Council's website. Margaret Alder of Durngate Terrace said, "Good to see this empty building being put back into good use."
Thank you, Richard. Now, Claire is going to about to be hit by a hosepipe, apparently.
I hope not. Be a bit dodgy.
but this is headed County Hit by Hosepipe Ban. A hosepipe ban covering much of Hampshire and the Isle of Wight has been announced as water companies look to manage reserves amid the continued heat. The restrictions will apply to all southern water supply areas and will come in force today, Friday, August the 5th, at 5 p.m. There is currently no indication of when it will end. Southern Water is the first company to introduce the measure. During the ban, the use of a hosepipe, including using sprinklers, dripper hoses, automatic irrigation systems, and similar devices, is prohibited for the following: watering a garden using a hosepipe, cleaning a private motor vehicle using a hosepipe, watering plants on domestic or other non-commercial premises using a hosepipe, cleaning a private leisure boat using a hosepipe, filling or maintaining a domestic swimming or paddling pool, drawing water using a hosepipe for domestic recreational use, filling or maintaining a domestic pond using a hosepipe, filling or maintaining an ornamental fountain, cleaning walls or windows of domestic premises using a hosepipe, cleaning paths or patios using a hosepipe, cleaning other artificial outdoor surfaces using a hosepipe. Residents will still be able to carry out any of the listed activities if they use mains water from a bucket or watering can. Any water not sourced from the mains, such as rainwater from a water butt, is also fine to use. Anyone who breaks the prohibitions could be hit with a fine of up to £1,000. Nowhere in England is currently considered to be in drought. Most of the country has instead moved into prolonged dry weather status. The Environment Agency has said it is now taking precautionary actions to mitigate impacts as hydrological conditions deteriorate, and enhancing its monitoring and protection of water resources along with the water companies. Several exceptions apply for people using their hoses to water plants for commercial sale or use, or for health and safety reasons.
Thank you, Claire. My piece is headed Revamp Revealed for King's Walk. Winchester Civic Chiefs have revealed detailed plans for the revamp of King's Walk in the city centre. The City Council is breathing new life into the shopping arcade and has a £385,000 budget for a range of improvements. The plans focus on improving the appearance of the retail terraces facing Middlebrook Street and the facade and entrance to King's Walk along Silver Hill, whilst also developing opportunities to improve the open spaces across this key area of the city centre, which is home to the Nutshell Theatre. In the 1970s complex, it will be upgraded with a modern LED lighting design to replace antiquated lighting, including 9 globe pendant lights above the courtyard, decluttering existing outdated signage with a cleaner visual approach to wayfinding through and around the area, repainting the brickwork along Silver Hill and replacing the existing solid doors to the rear entrances of shops with new doors incorporating windows, repurposing an existing loading bay, currently used for rubbish storage and collection, in Tanner Street as an event space for gathering cultural events and a market. The scheme has been led by a team including architectural practice Studio Multi, as reported by the Chronicle earlier this year. Nicola Rutt, director of Studio Multi, said, "In recent months, we have spoken with many of the traders in King's Walk and have put their views for the transformation at the heart of our proposals to revitalise this part of the city. We're seeking to transform the open spaces of King's Walk by turning them into usable extensions of indoor spaces. The intention being that this will encourage the local community and visitors to Winchester to engage more with King's Walk, which has a rich mix of independent creative industries and characterful outer door spaces. Our proposals will also, we believe, contribute to the longer-term development of a cultural quarter in the area by seeking to attract more creative, independent businesses to the centre of Winchester." Councillor Martin Todd, council leader and cabinet member for asset management, said, "It is great to see these existing proposals moving ahead. The team has worked closely with the tenants, local businesses, with the police, and to design these much needed improvements to King's Walk, which represent the early stages in what will eventually be a much wider transformation and improvement of a larger part of the city centre. This is only the beginning, but it starts to show the great potential impact of a wider vision for Central Winchester Regeneration Site and its significant long-term benefits to people living and working in and around the district, including the creation of a flexible workspace, retail and leisure facilities, together with high-quality housing and attractive public realm." Well, we now move on to the death notices. Buckland, Alan Buckland, sadly passed away peacefully at home on Sunday, the 24th of July.
Corrie, Gillian Marjorie Corrie de Brocklebank, died peacefully in her sleep on the 18th of June, aged 92.
Edwards, Vera Edwards, passed away peacefully on the 20th of July 2022, aged 81.
Green, Richard John Green, passed away at Winchester Hospice on 24th of July, aged 78.
Leavitt Shenley, Phillida Leavitt Shenley. "With great sadness, the family of Phillida Leavitt Shenley announced her death on the 26th of July 2022 at her home."
Newman, Margaret Newman, 1937 to 2022, died peacefully at home on Thursday, the 21st of July.
Tufil, Amanda Brendan D. Tufil, passed away peacefully on the 26th of July, aged 77.
Thank you, everyone. Now we move on to the Christian comment, which Claire is going to read for us, please.
This is headed, "We Are Never Alone." "I have just returned from a wonderful week in the Netherlands, joining people involved in healthcare from six European countries. It was a cultural event, with the first 3 days spent enjoying trips to various places of interest and relaxation. Then we spent the next 3 days listening to lectures on solitude and isolation in healthcare. It included thoughts on enforced and chosen solitude and loneliness when it is enforced. The disappearance of self when prisoners are isolated, and a vicious cycle of antisocial behaviour and more punitive incarceration ensues. We were told about the impact of being left out, not making friends easily, and internet bullying on young people. We learned about the impact of isolation on carers of those with dementia, and also the neurology of addiction. There was essentially a Christian conference, and so we considered some hopeful scriptural consolations. We were reminded that Jesus was often alone, sometimes out of choice. He was pressed upon by large crowds so much that he and his disciples didn't even have time to eat. That's Mark 4, verse 25, and Mark 3, verse 20. He purposefully and famously took himself into the desert for 40 days to be isolated and in touch with God his Father. Matthew 4, verses 1 to 11. We can be consoled in loneliness or persecution by the Psalms. Psalm 71 says, "In you, Lord, I have taken refuge. Let me never be put to shame. In your righteousness, rescue me and deliver me. Turn to me and save me." So we are not alone. We always have God to comfort us and turn to. But for some, the loss of human contact through age, loss of mobility, mental health, or imprisonment is hard to bear. Jesus also tells us, "He has sent me to proclaim freedom for prisoners, bring sight to the blind, and to set the oppressed free." That's in Luke 4, verse 18. So what are we to make of those contradicting messages? Solitude can be good, enriching, fulfilling, and can bring us closer to our God. But it can be devastating, hard to bear, and we begin to disappear into depression and sadness. The answer, then, must be both of these things. We should seek some periods of solitude to allow God's Spirit to enter us. I like to think of him swirling about inside me and reaching those difficult parts. In the strength that gives us, we can then visit the lonely and isolated, comfort our children and grandchildren when they are finding life hard to navigate, and give carers a break from their responsibilities. We should visit the sick, prisoners of any kind, and take some cheerfulness and news to others who need some company. We concluded at the conference that being alone can be good, but loneliness is not good. So let us seek one for ourselves and our inner growth, and try to alleviate the other in others, as Jesus asked us to do. And that was written by Liz Tatum.
Thank you, Claire. Well, now we move on to letters to the editor. Now, last time I presented this talking newspaper, I commented that there was usually a large number of readers' letters to be read out each week. But that week there were only 6 letters. Well, this week is much better. There are 7 letters. So, Vara, could you start us off with the first letter, please?
Yes, this comes from Chris O'Neill. "In the name of the social evil that is austerity, we are offered yet another initiative by Hampshire County Council, adding to cutbacks already totalling £500 million. They claim that they are conducting a consultation for changes to bus passes and concessionary travel. This is disingenuous. The consultative document, consisting of 22 pages, offers a number of changes, all of which are detrimental to current concessionary travel for, amongst others, the disabled, elderly, and isolated. It makes clear that if their proposals are rejected, others will be implemented, as, come what may, reductions to the budget will be made. It brings to mind the simile, 'I intend to punch you. Would you prefer the blow in your face or stomach?' P- Pensioners, who this mainly affects, are in the later stages of their lives, a time when often they face many challenges, such as failing sight, hearing, and mobility. For some, it means a slow retreat into a very dark place. If this wasn't enough, with fast rising inflation, they face savage rising costs and devaluation of any savings they might have. Did Councillor Heron, an experienced and well-respected elected representative, and his cohort take these facts into account when creating his consultation? Probably not. His proposals are potentially life-changing and destructive for many in Hampshire. I am sure there is a dustbin nearby, an appropriate depository for his consultation. And that comes from Chris O'Neill, Chairman, the Hampshire Unison Retired Members Section.
Thank you, Vara. Richard, please.
Well, Vara, yes, I have some comment here from Councillor Edward Heron, the aforementioned Executive Lead Member. And it's entitled OAP Bus Passes. For your reader's benefit, may I clarify the County Council's position on its proposed changes to funding for supported passenger transport schemes in Hampshire Chronicle, July 28. Firstly, it's important to stress that the County Council is not proposing and has never proposed taking away bus passes. As stated in the consultation information pack, the proposals relating to the National Concessionary Travel Scheme bus passes are about removing some discretionary enhancements funded by the County Council, including, for example, no longer providing taxi vouchers as an alternative to a disabled person's bus pass, and removing the 25% fare discount concessionary pass holders currently receive on dial-a-ride and call-and-go services. Any proposed changes to back office arrangements would have no impact on service users, but would enable supported passenger transport services to operate more efficiently, thereby reducing the costs incurred to the County Council. Any operational changes to current County Council funded public bus and community transport services, such as dial-a-ride, call-and-go and taxi share, might involve adjusting the number of times per day that a supported bus or community transport service operates, altering the number of days per week that a bus or community transport service operates on supported routes, and changing the days of the week a public bus or community transport service operates, seeking to replace some local bus services with alternative provisions such as taxi share services. No decisions have yet been made. Our consultation on the proposed changes has recently closed. So you're too late. And the results are currently being analysed before any final decision is considered in the autumn. So, as I say, that's from Councillor Edward Heron, Executive Lead Member for Transport and Environment Strategy, the Castle, Winchester.
Thank you, Richard. Claire, please.
This letter is headed "The Dangers of Warmer Temperatures." Winchester Action on the Climate Crisis said that temperatures over 40 degrees will be much more common over the coming years as greenhouse gases change our climate. We will have more disruption, more fires, and more deaths from the heat. But it's not too late to stop fueling the climate crisis. We need to drive less, eat less meat, insulate our homes, and we must tell our politicians, local and national, that we expect them to take a lead and make funds available to help. And this was written by Chris Holloway, who's a trustee, Winchester Action on Climate Crisis, Main Campus, University of Winchester, Sparkford Road, Winchester.
Thank you, Claire. My letter is written by James Anderson, and it's headed "Future PM?" Some years ago, this paper kindly published my letter warning about the NHS messing about with children's gender at the Tavistock Clinic. Only now has the NHS Child Gender Service been exposed as a state-funded assault on vulnerable children and being closed down. While the Tavistock flourished, our MP, Steve Brine, was Parliamentary Private Secretary to the Health Secretary and then Under-Secretary for Public Health. He described himself as enjoying his time at Health while the rot at the Tavistock prospered under his nose. In his most recent letter from Westminster, Steve lauds the net zero targets, claiming economic growth and saying that Rishi Sunak has a firm grip on the detail of how we reasonably get there. If only Steve and Rishi would share their economic analysis. For the government minister, Minister Kemi Badenoch says it is wrong of us to set the target without having a clear plan of the cost and knowing what it would entail. She goes on to say the result will be economic disablement and increased poverty. So, does our wannabe PM Rishi have a firm grip on the detail, unpublished? Or is he something else? His proposed £10 fine for an NHS no-show is an example of the ham-fisted over-regulation and micromanagement that the nation needs to escape from. The flip-flopping on tax is extraordinary. He voted for Brexit, but supported Theresa May's Brexit in name only, leaving me with the impression of a closet Remainer. I can find little evidence of his political philosophy either as an investment banker or as an MP. Quite what he believes in, other than his own career, remains a mystery. Well, at least to me. And that was written by James Anderson of Wright's Close, South Wanston. And Vara, please.
Yes, this one is Roadwork Woe in Eastleigh. And it comes from Mr. L.J. White. Well, for the next 5 weeks, but see below, we are now marooned on the aviary, unless one has a car. A couple of weeks ago, large notices appeared at either end of Nightingale Avenue stating this road would be closed for 5 weeks from Monday, July the 25th. This is the one and only through road of the estate, and is used by the Fair Oak to Southampton, number 2, and the East Lee to Romsey, number 5, buses. Coming home tonight to my local bus stop, a notice informed me this stop would be closed during these works, 4 weeks, albeit only from 9:30 a.m. to 4:30 p.m., and likewise the other stops in the avenue, as the buses would be diverted direct to Stoneham Lane, number 2, and Chestnut Avenue, number 5. Although there was no information about alternative stops, I can only presume the stop in Parsfield Avenue could be used, some 3/4 of a mile away. Not too bad, except coming home loaded with shopping, carrying it uphill. The online Blue Star number 2 timetable for the 25th onwards does not mention the effects on the route. This work is apparently to improve the safety, perhaps very necessary now the school crossing lady has been withdrawn. Over the years, when various utilities have done major roadworks, the buses kept running with a single lane section controlled by traffic lights. Why not this time? Why is this work only being carried out part-time, half-day, Monday to Friday? Remember how Network Rail gets regularly criticised for shutting a route for a weekend, but working round the clock, endeavouring to get the job done in the shortest time. Incidentally, I hope they keep the 4 to 5 week closure. After all, there have been temporary traffic lights and the footpath closed outside St Nicholas Church in Stoneham Lane since last November, a job which should have been finished in May. Also, it is rumoured Nightingale Avenue is to undergo much-needed major resurfacing next year. I wonder what will happen. And that comes from Mr L.J. White of Sparrow Square, Eastleigh.
Thank you, Vara. Richard, please.
I'm not sure it gets any better, really. This from Simon Lever, who has a vision for an electric future. Those in favour of pursuing electric transport solutions, and especially bicycle paths, should visit the Netherlands, where there are cycle paths inside and outside city centres. Does anyone remember milk floats in the 50s and early 60s? Their sound on arrival with fresh milk and eggs delivered door to door. Electric trams and trolley buses powered by overhead power lines were the norm. Electric trams in Netherlands are a major form of public transport, running on rails and powered by overhead cables. Cyclists have their own traffic lights in the Netherlands and have a right of way, although a red light is often ignored. From the early 1970s, England seemed to dislike electric transport in cities, replacing it with smelly diesel buses. Electric vehicles are here to stay, and a positive way to reduce pollution. There are a number of pointers to consider. One, the creation of sensible cycle scooter paths and limiting the speed of scooters. Two, cycle paths should not be a punishment levelled at vehicles. Cycle paths should not be overly wide, blocking vehicle use, as electric power will gradually take prominence. Three, the prosperity of Winchester should not be overlooked, where visitors must not be deterred from visiting our vibrant city centre. Thus, extending park and ride services using electric buses would be essential. Four, such an enormous undertaking will require the cooperation of all parties. Challenging, but critically important. Electrification is a sensible idea, but must not be introduced as a punishment. Simon Lever, Juniper Close, Badger Farm.
Thank you, Richard. And Claire, the last letter, please.
This is headed Shop Closure. It was with great dismay that I heard recently of the forthcoming closing of the GET charity bookshop in the Brooks Centre. Excuse me. Apparently, the landlord requires the premises back for a new tenant, Orange Theory Fitness Gym, so the bookshop will have to vacate in the next few weeks. This is sad news for the charity, which has had the use of the vacant shop for about the last year. The manager, Mark Otter, and his team of volunteers have put a lot of hard work, effort and time to make this venture a thriving success in the aim of promoting literacy. They have created a friendly haven for book lovers of all ages, from oldies like myself down to tiny tots with a wide stock. As a regular user and supporter of this facility, I would like them to know that their accomplishment is much appreciated and valued by many people. I would also like to appeal to the folk of the area that if anyone knows of a vacant facility that would be suitable and available, to let the charity know and tell the shop manager, so that this project could rise again like a phoenix in the future of Winchester. Edward Hopper, Brassey Road, Full Flood, Winchester.
Thank you, Claire. Now, I've got the opinion piece, which this week is written by Kimberly Barber. In the deepest, darkest depth of winter, a few weeks safe after emerging from whatever Mark lockdown we had been in, I handed over my credit card details to a holiday park company, Parkdean, and booked a week on the Isle of Wight. This was the first year we've had to contend with booking a break in the school holidays, and it's true what people tell you about the price. Our usual end of September break, which combined with sun holiday vouchers would cost a couple of £100s, is now going to cost an extra £1,000 with ferry. Little did we know, way back in December, that everything was going to cost so much more too. Still, we've taken the hit on the finances, packed a little more than we usually would, and loaded the kids up in the car. The beauty of living in Hampshire is that the Isle of Wight is so near. The ferry trip seems like we're going abroad and breaks the holiday up for the kids. So this week, I've been enjoying the delights of the Isle of Wight. It's been a joy to experience the island with sun. We've spotted it a few times on our autumn breaks, but this year we've been lucky enough to enjoy warmth and sun. The promenades at Shanklin and Sandown are transformed into scenes from foreign holidays past. People on the beach, on rented sun lounges with parasols, restaurant terraces packed with people enjoying food al fresco, beach bars serving beach drinks. It's been a real treat. Our day out in Shanklin was made even more enjoyable by the carnival which took place on Saturday. We only stayed for the day apart from there was a whole evening of celebrations planned too. It was exceptionally well organised with wonderful, helpful volunteers. We found the start of the kids' parade at the pier and followed it down to the park, where entertainment had been laid on. We'd hired bikes to get down there from a holiday park, and on reaching the park, the kids' pannier had slowly deflated. A slowly deflating tyre. With no bike shop in sight and no knowledge of the town, my other half asked a St John's Ambulance volunteer for information. Expecting to be pointed in the right direction, we were blown away when she said that she'd get her husband to run a bike pump down to the park, and within 10 minutes he was at the park with a pump and the tyre was fully inflated. Such a kind and helpful gesture. She was a really great example of the friendly Isle of Wight locals. Perhaps we were expecting a little too much then when it came to filling our reusable water bottles. As winners of the children's carnivals were announced as climate change, a group of people dressed in fancy dress carrying messages about saving the world, I went looking for somewhere to fill our reusable water bottles. The public loos in the park were equipped with the annoying sinks that automatically dispense a pea of soap, then sprinkle your hand with water fleetingly before blasting it with air. Hopefully in a world post-COVID, these machines have been consigned to history. There's no hope of even getting through the first line of happy birthday while using them, let alone a whole rendition. Plus, there's no way of filling a bottle. My search took me to the ice cream stand, where we'd only minutes before spent £10 buying treats for the family. I asked politely if the attendant could fill a bottle, to which he replied politely enough, well, that he was sorry, but that he wasn't allowed to fill people's bottles. He was obviously following instructions from higher up, and it would be fruitless to make the one guy who was working hard, serving on a busy Saturday, feel he had about his employer's rubbish policies. So, while climate change was being crowned winners of Shanklin Carnival, I was buying a single-use plastic water bottle in order to fill a reusable water bottle so that my kids wouldn't go thirsty on a hot and sunny day in the park. Well, obviously, I appreciate that everybody needs to make money. I suppose there's quite a bit of profit to be had from selling a bottle of water for £1.80, but seriously? A short while later, when the kids were inevitably thirsty again, me and the littlest one extended our search to Shanklin Bowls Club. There we were met with the welcoming and friendly side of the Isle of Wight we were used to. A lovely lady made my daughter a cup of orange squash. The club was packed and everyone was delightfully friendly. We've had a lovely time on the Isle of Wight. Hopefully everyone will catch on to the importance of making tiny changes to help the environment soon. Well, Richard will now read the editorial comment, please.
Which asks, are we at peak student in the city? Enough is enough, say residents living in Winnall. They want to see a halt to the spread of student accommodation on their estate. River Park campaigner Rose Burns was recently quoted as saying that Winchester now has more students per head of population than Oxford or Cambridge. Those two cities have been major education centres since the Middle Ages. 20 years ago, Winchester had a relatively small King Alfred's College and a School of Art. King Alfred's, now Winchester University, has grown hugely, and the expansion shows little sign of stopping, fuelled by the income from the 9,000 a year student fees. The influx has been so great and so sudden that many parts of the city are still reeling from the shock. It's hard to see what can be done to stop this growth in a free market society, but the impact of the university's expansion should be at the forefront of civic thinking. There is no doubt that this unchecked growth has twisted the city's equilibrium. The issue needs to be addressed. A good start would see the university banning student cars. It's been done elsewhere.
Thank you, Richard. Now, Vara is going to read a letter from Westminster, which this week comes from the MP for the Meon Valley, Flick Drummond. Vara, please.
Yes, and she's particularly interested, of course, in the Meon Valley, but it goes for everywhere as well. Around 7,000 families in Meon Valley have now received £326 of government support to help with cost of living pressures. The money automatically hit eligible bank accounts last month as part of the government's £37 billion national support package. A second instalment of £324 will be given in the autumn, meaning the support is worth in total £650. Separate payments for pensioners and disabled people will also arrive later this year. I think this money will make a big difference, as it appears inflation caused by the war in Ukraine and post-COVID supply disruption will remain for some time yet. This money, when combined with other support, means millions of low-income households across the UK could receive at least £1,200 from the government by Christmas to ease cost-of-living pressures. It is also targeted towards those who need it most over the coming months to deal with very sharp rises in energy bills, food and fuel. In addition, around 6,400 individuals in Meon Valley will receive the £150 disability payment this autumn, and nationally, over 8 million pensioner households could get an extra £300 from winter fuel payments in November and December. Households entitled to the two payments are those in receipt of the following benefits: Universal Credit, Income-Based Job Seekers Allowance, Income-Related Employment and Support Allowance, Income Support, Working Tax Credit, Child Tax Credit, and Pension Credit. If you are on these benefits, but you have not received the first instalment, then please do get in touch with me. Also, every household will receive £400 off their energy bill from October to help with the cost of living. We now have the two final candidates vying to become the leader of the Conservative Party and Prime Minister. I am supporting Rishi Sunak because I believe he has the best economic policy, as well as integrity and professionalism. I had a chat with him last week so that I could understand his views and was satisfied that increasing corporation tax would be a gradual tax and he would be concentrating on encouraging investment and innovation. It is also important that he agrees with me that reform in education is crucial to provide skills for the future. However, Liz Truss is also a talented and experienced leader. Both would make excellent prime ministers. The party membership will make its decision at the end of the summer. There is worrying news about England's longest, driest 8-month period since 1976. I know many Chronicle readers will remember a summer back then of standpipes and scorched grass. This is very concerning, as it is very likely that the south of England will move into a period of drought. The message here is to try and conserve water and to cut out car washing, long showers and watering the garden, particularly the grass, which will come back when the rain does come. But water companies need to invest more and fix leaking pipes. England's nine companies are losing up to a quarter of their supply, or an incredible 2.4 billion litres of water every day. There is some good news. The new Havant Thicket Reservoir will increase capacity in the south of Hampshire, but more needs to be done. Water companies need to put their own house in order. They cannot ask customers to save water forever while so much is lost due to a leaky supply system.
Thank you, Vara, for that fascinating letter from Flick Drummond. Now we've got an item from Belgarum, which, as you probably know, is an alternative look at the news. This one is entitled "The Ghost Signs in City Walls." Claire, please.
Here we go. Ghost signs are old advertising signs that have been preserved long after the original business ceased to exist. There are several such signs around Winchester which give insight into local history, writes Claudia Cox. At the end of the High Street is a replica of the sign for the historic Black Swan Hotel, which stood from at least 1828 until 1935. Sherlock Holmes and John Watson visit this hotel in Conan Doyle's The Adventure of the Copper Beeches, and it is described as being an inn of repute on the High Street at no distance from the station. The original wooden swan started falling apart in recent years. By 2012, the swan's head and neck were in disrepair, and a local craftsman carved a new swan. In 1944, emergency water supplies were commissioned in towns all over the country in case the main water supply was damaged in a bombing raid, and water was needed to put out fires. One such sign is still visible on Cranworth Road, Fulflood. The letters SWS stand for Static Water Supply, and an arrow points to where the water tank once was. The building on the corner of Upper Brook Street and North Walls used to be a corner shop, and painted adverts for Nestle milk are preserved on the walls. The current owner has renamed the building Nestle House and opened it as an Airbnb this year. In the early 1900s, a coach and car building company called Gandhi and Son operated from Parchment Street. As the sign has faded over time, earlier writing has become visible through the paint, which indicated that the advert was redone several times. The Chimneys pub in Wick closed in 2004 after serving as a community hub for decades. It was first built as a hotel in the 1950s, then converted into a 1940s-inspired pub called Blighty's, before being renamed Chimneys. It was demolished in 2005 to make way for the Aldi store. Today, all that remains of it is this sign by the side of the road, which says Chimneys.
Thank you, Claire. Now, a quick look at things that might be of interest to you going on in the area. excuse me. On Sunday, the 7th of August, there is a music cruise on the steamship Shield Hall, starting at 2 p.m. And the music is provided by RU40, which is a UB40 tribute band. Also on Sunday the 7th, the Twyford Waterworks will have an open day starting at 11 a.m. If you are a music festival goer, you already know about the Boomtown Festival, which runs from Wednesday the 10th to Sunday the 14th, that is at the Matterley Bowl. On Friday the 12th, there is a Winchester Ghost Tour at 8:30 p.m. It says, get ready to discover the ghosts of Winchester on the city's original Winchester Ghost Tour. And you can get details of this from Scared at supernaturaltours.co.uk. On Saturday the 13th, there is the Comedy of Errors, and that's at Fursley Gardens. It runs from the 13th of August until the 3rd of September. Okay, it's an open-air production of Shakespeare's funniest play. The Comedy of Errors is performed by a West End cast and features a live jazz band throughout in the idyllic setting of Fursley Gardens. That's at Minstead. Now, Vara has a piece of news, please.
Yes, tickets for Heritage Open Days will be available soon. Hampshire History Trust has announced bookings will open on August the 9th for events in the 2022 Winchester Heritage Open Days Festival. Heritage Open Days, a free national festival celebrating history and culture, will take place from September the 9th to the 18th. This year marks the seventh year that the Trust has supported the celebration of local heritage. The HHT, that's the Hampshire History Trust, has appointed a festival coordinator to help manage the Winchester events, with as many as 60 announced so far. The theme for the 2022 festival is Astounding Inventions. Highlights include live demonstrations of astounding foodstuffs at the Honesty Cookery School, behind-the-scenes insights at the Watercress Line Railway, and talks and tours like Winchester City Museum's Become an Inventor. The full festival programme, along with booking details, can be found online at www.winchesterheritageopendays.org. Festival coordinator Laura Bennett said, "I'm thrilled to join the HOD's team and kickstart my career in heritage here in the city and county where I've had so many amazing experiences. I couldn't pick a favourite event, but this year I'm especially excited to see the performance of Peddlers and Petticoats on the life of Hampshire-born inventor Hertha Ayrton Marks as part of the Astounding Inventions theme." Unfortunately, this thing doesn't say where this performance of Peddlers and Petticoats is happening, so you'll have to, I'm afraid, go to the website.
Thank you, Vara. And now Claire has a very short piece to add to what's on.
Well, Winchester Quakers Peace and Social Witness Group are holding a Silent Witness for Peace event at the Buttercross on Saturday, August the 6th, the anniversary of the atomic bomb attack on Hiroshima.
Thank you, Claire. Well, finally, before we go on to items of general news, I know that you are all waiting for the lighting up times. So I won't make you wait any longer. The sun, if there is any, will rise at about 5 a.m. and will set again at about 9:30 p.m. Right, so on with the items of general news. And Vara, could you have your first article, please?
Yes, this is the restoration for an upmarket Winchester restaurant. An upmarket Winchester restaurant is undergoing renovation as it looks to revitalise its appearance. Brasserie Blanc in Jury Street has been fenced off with scaffolding as the restaurant readies the return of Parisian styling to its decor. A spokesman from Brasserie Blanc said, "The brasserie was due for a refresh, and guests can expect to see the return of Parisian styling with a little more ooh la la." Ooh. There will be new floral and velvet banquettes, beautiful colour schemes, biophilic details, whatever they are, and an enhanced central courtyard space that flows from the bar, providing a perfect outdoor oasis in the centre of Winchester. The restaurant, it says, is set to open on Thursday, August the 4th, so it'll already be open by the time you read this. It comes as the former Loch Fyne unit next door is set to have a new tenant after being empty for 2 years. Turkish restaurant Turkaz is set to open in the unit early September. Turkaz will offer a range of Turkish cuisine, charcoal grill fish and meats, as well as vegetarian dishes and classics such as moussaka and halloumi salad.
Thank you, Vara. Richard, please.
Yes. This is about Winchester schools creaking at the seams.
Oh, dear.
Host families in Winchester say they are being continually frustrated in their efforts to find school places for Ukrainian refugees. Many families have to endure lengthy appeals after seeing their initial applications rejected. Others are facing the possibility of having to travel miles as the city's schools creak at the seams. Hampshire County Council has said it is working hard to find places for Ukrainian guests, revealing that it's already seen some 500 approaches. Stephanie Light, 69, from Winchester, took in Victoria and her two daughters under the Homes for Ukraine scheme. Since they arrived on June the 29th, the family have already had 3 rejection letters from nearby schools. Mrs. Light said it's been very difficult, if not impossible, to find a school for the children. As far as I can tell, there are no contingency arrangements for any temporary education should they still not have a place come September. I've spoken to plenty of other hosts who are in exactly the same situation. I've got a friend waiting for a family to come over, and they will have absolutely no chance of finding somewhere. The whole thing has been a shambles. Our public services are creaking up the seams. Mrs. Light said this latest issue has heaped further stress on hosts who have already been bombarded with bureaucracy. After being told there were still places at Stanmore Primary School, Mrs. Light said she walked the almost 4-mile round trip with the family so they could view it in person. However, with one daughter currently struggling with a foot condition, she said it's unrealistic to expect the children to travel there and back on foot each day. Winchester City Councillor John Tippett Cooper said a critical part of refugee settlement is getting refugee children into local schools. This has obvious benefits. The universal feedback I have received is that schools in Winchester have been absolutely brilliant in stepping up to support refugee children. The appeals process is stressful and complex, especially to families who have already had recent traumatic experiences. But the relevant rules do allow Hampshire County Council to allow for the admission of pupils above limits for refugee children. A spokesperson for Hampshire said, "Our schools continue to work incredibly hard to help Ukrainian families arriving in Hampshire, handling over 500 approaches for places. Most children seeking places are either already in school or have received offers of places in a local school. Our aim is to keep waiting times as short as possible for those remaining."
Thank you, Richard. Claire, please.
Cold Case Killers film. The crew are in Winchester. A TV company is telling the story of the investigation that eventually secured justice for the murder of Bramberge widow Georgina Edmonds. The filmmakers for Cold Case Killers have been in Winchester to interview Hampshire Chronicle reporter Andrew Napier, who covered the horrific killing in January 2008 and the Crown Court trials in 2012 and 16. Mrs. Edmonds, who's 77, was battered to death with a rolling pin in the kitchen of her Riverside cottage by Eastleigh man Matthew Hamlin. He had tortured her to try to obtain her debit card PIN code. At the first trial at Winchester Crown Court in January 2012, Hamlin was acquitted, but after a change in the double jeopardy law, Hamlin was retried and jailed for life in February 2016. Although Hamlin was found not guilty, the police never closed the case and there was a review of the DNA evidence. The programme makers have interviewed police officers and forensic experts who were involved. The programme is part of a documentary series being made by Rare TV and is due to be broadcast on Channel 5 in the autumn. Producer Claire Forsyth said, "We are looking at cold cases, historical cold cases that the police have gone to the end of the earth to solve. The ways they could not let go, the ways they couldn't forget. Then either through improvements in science or other developments, the case is finally solved that bring justice for the victims."
Thank you, Claire. My item is headed Golf Club Pro Jailed for Fraud. The head professional at Winchester Golf Club has been jailed for 5 years for defrauding the club of more than £100,000. Stephen Hunter, 54, of Mill Lane, Abbotsworthy, was sentenced at Salisbury Crown Court after being convicted at trial on 2 counts of frauds against the Royal Winchester Golf Club, false accounting and cheating Her Majesty's Revenue and Customs. Sentencing, Judge Andrew Barnett told him last Thursday, "Your dishonest conduct was over a period of some 5 years when you were the head professional at Royal Winchester Golf Club. You had occupied that post for some considerable period, having been appointed in the 1990s, and you had attracted a considerable amount of support and admiration from members, along with a high degree of trust. Whether motivated by greed or disorganisation, that became dishonest. You exploited the club and the trust they had put in you to some considerable degree." He added, "Your criminality was extensive, deliberate and deeply wounding to those who put their trust in you." The court heard that he stole £109,375 in green fee payments from the club, which was established in 1888 during a 5-year period from June 2013. A CPS spokesman said Hunter was trusted by the club to take green fee payments from visitors to the club at his on-site professional golf shop, but he vastly underreported the takings and kept the difference for himself. It was only when the club manager reviewed the figures for income from visitors' fees that the scale of Hunter's fraudulent behaviour was discovered. He was consistently claiming that the income was only a third of what it should have been, using the rest of the money to fund his lifestyle. Hunter also cruelly stole £11,000 that had been donated at 2 charity golf days held in aid of Canine Partners, organised in memory of Les Day, a long-standing member of the golf club, with the charity only receiving £47. The false accounting charge related to diverting £343,449 of taking from his professional golf shop to his personal bank account instead of his business account to avoid paying tax. He further cheated the public revenue by failing to declare retainer payments and the VAT payments of more than £105,000 to HMRC. Robert Shaw, mitigating, described Hunter as a family man and said, he is of previous good character. What he has done has undermined his good name and his work at the club, where for many years he was a loyal member. He had been there for 30 years. He added, he has voluntarily repaid 50% of the sum, and in due course is expected the club will be fully recompensed under the Proceeds of Crime Act. This is not a man without the means to repay. Elizabeth Medland, CPS Wessex Senior Crown Prosecutor, said this case involved a thorough and complex investigation with a review of a vast number of financial records and evidence from financial experts to trace the money Hunter had fraudulently taken. His deception has not only caused the golf club financial loss, but has also prevented the charity from receiving the benefit of very generous donations made in memory of a man who meant a lot to the club and its patrons. The Royal Winchester Golf Club declined to comment. Please.
An excavation group is celebrating its 60th anniversary with a special exhibition. Winchester Excavations Committee is holding the display, titled The Great Winchester Dig, at the Hampshire Record Office until September the 29th. The exhibition showcases how Winchester Excavations Committee's archaeological digs revolutionised the understanding of Winchester's history. Visitors can expect to see a selection of archaeological finds from 1961 to 71, as well as a visual sketch of the key sites uncovered in Winchester. The decade-long programme of excavation took place in Winchester locations such as the Cathedral Green and Wolvesey Castle. The project, led by Professor Martin Biddle, informed key aspects of modern urban archaeology. The Winchester excavations uncovered 2,000 years of history, from the Iron Age to the emergence of modern Winchester in the 18th and 19th centuries. Chairman of the Winchester Excavation Committee, Barbara Bryant, said, "If you go to the exhibition, you'll be taken back in time to when Martin was a remarkably young archaeologist at the time, started a unique series of digs in Winchester which were groundbreaking. This whole project, which was Martin's vision, has given Winchester back its past. It's phenomenal what was excavated and how it was done, and now a great deal more is known." The Hampshire Record Office posted on Facebook, "We are delighted to be hosting Winchester Excavation Committee's 60th anniversary exhibition."
Thank you, Vara. Richard, please.
Yes, well, Marwell Zoo is welcoming a new Grevy's zebra foal.
Oh.
Marwell welcomed the birth of a new Grevy's zebra from the first time mum, Kumba, with the new arrival very excited to show its new moves when first let into the Wild Explorers paddock. Marwell, the only zoo to house all three species of zebra, welcomed another to its collection the night of July the 8th, giving her keepers a lovely surprise when they got to work in the morning. The foal was given access to the zoo's Wild Explorers paddock for the first time on Monday, with the youngster delighted in trying out its new skills running circles around its mum in a series of zoomies. Grevers are the largest zebra species and are found in remote parts of northern Kenya and southern Ethiopia. They are currently thought to be fewer than 2,000 in the wild, and it's been estimated the species has seen a 50% decline in the past 30 years. Habitat loss, extended periods of drought, and poaching have all contributed to the species' characterisation as an endangered species. However, their numbers are now thought to be stabilising. Kumba and her new foal are part of the European ex situ breeding programme for the species and will hopefully contribute to maintaining a healthy captive population and preserving the genetic diversity for the future. They've been left alone to bond for the first few days, so the sex of the foal is not yet known. A name will also be decided at a later date.
Thank you, Richard. Claire?
I hope the price doesn't increase. Fish and chip shop owners say more restaurants will close and prices will rise unless they get urgent government support. Reports last month revealed that some 5,000 shops could close and that prices in many parts are now up by 35%. Takeaways and restaurants rely on Ukraine for sunflower oil and Russia for white fish. But the war has led to a shortage of supplies and the price of the dwindling levels which are available is soaring. Many fish and chip shops in Winchester are feeling the crunch with catch fish and chips owner Mefut Turk losing customers after putting his prices up. He said, "Everything is double the price now. Last year, a case of fish was £130, and now it's £230. Same as oil. We're quite affected, and we're losing customers because they think it's so expensive. We've had to cover wages, electricity, tax, and produce. We're a family business, and we're quite worried. There's not much we can do. I just hope the price doesn't increase any more." In a recent interview with GB News, Stuart Devine from the National Federation of Fish Fryers, NFFF, said, "We've had a very difficult time. We were hit hard with the COVID and Brexit and has had an important impact on us too. Now, of course, we've got the war in Ukraine. Although we fully support the government's actions, we are crying out for the government for help. It comes as UK inflation hits 40-year high of 9.4% and could hit 12% by October, according to the ONS, with the price of housing, water, electricity, gas and fuels increasing by 19.6% since June 2021. Bonafide's owner, Sam Kabir, opened his new fish and chip shop June 2022 and feels worried for the future. He said, "I'm quite new to the trade, but I've heard a lot about it. I think the fear is a lot of businesses are too scared to put their prices up because they're worried their customers will go elsewhere. It's slightly worrying, but what a lot of businesses do in charge is charge a bit more per item, but it's how you can justify it with the service. We're doing loaded fish and chips, sauce options and garnish. It's thinking outside the box and coming up with other strategies."
Thank you, Claire. My next item is headed "Workers So Angry." A Southampton Royal Mail Union representative has warned the city could face disruption to postal services if hundreds of workers go on strike. Members of the Communication Workers Union are being balloted over industrial action following disputes over jobs and pay. If the majority is in favour of walking out, residents could see disruption with their post from as early as September. Rob Hayhurst, an area delivery representative for 19 Royal Mail branches across the county, including Shirley and Bitton Manor, said there are more than 150 strike supporters in the city. The 48-year-old said, "I have worked for 20 years through disputes in 2007 and 2009, and in all my time I've never seen the workers so energised and so angry. We worked through the pandemic and delivered profits. At the time we didn't know if COVID was airborne or something, so essentially we were risking our lives." The Royal Mail spokesperson said, We are losing £1 million a day, and we need to change what we are doing to fix the situation. Picket lines could be formed across several Hampshire postal offices, including Winchester, Alresford, Romsey, Lymington, Shirley and Bitton Manor. The union's ballot will close on August the 17th. Envara, please.
Window smashing continues on Winchester High Street. A local betting agency has become yet another victim to antisocial behaviour with two smashed windows. Coral Betting Agency in St George's Street had their windows smashed on Thursday morning. The shop was alerted an hour after the incident occurred and were able to get the damage boarded up the same day. A service worker at the local Coral branch said, "The police haven't said anything, but we are covered by insurance." The police have been contacted for further information. Both the door and one of the front window panes were smashed and have been boarded up, but the betting shop has remained open. The incident follows a series of window smashing within Winchester High Street over the last few months. Previous victims include River Mini Market, Cell Repairs, Echo, Mint Velvet, Fat Face, Pret-a-Manger and the Hampshire Chronicle Office.
Thank you, Ara. Richard, please.
Well, I don't know where they're going to get their glass from, because my item is window firm crashes.
Oh, dear, oh, dear.
A long-standing Winchester windows business has gone into liquidation, it's been confirmed. In an email to a customer, seen by the Chronicle, a former employee confirmed that County Windows is no more. "We have gone into liquidation yesterday, July 28th. There is no County Windows." County Windows in Eastern Lane, Winnell, was established in 1952 and specialised in conservatories, doors and windows. Former customers have been reacting to the news, with some left with incomplete jobs. One customer, who wished to remain anonymous, explained that they'd ordered a machine... No, they didn't. They ordered a matching door and window, which was fitted in March. However, the customer noticed that there were no Georgian bars in the pane of glass. County Windows acknowledged the mistake and promised to reorder the correct item. The customer said the weeks passed and nothing was heard from County Windows. I contacted them again in early May and was told that a complaint had been raised with the suppliers. From late May until early July, I sent a number of emails resulting in feeble apologies with no evidence of action. At no time was I given a date indicating when the item would be available. I began to wonder if the error was ever going to be corrected. Finally, last Friday, my contact in the firm sent an email saying, "We've gone into liquidation. There is no County Windows." Another customer, David Light, said that he was having a conservatory installed and that it was 95% complete. He said, "At face value, our conservatory looks okay, but I really wished I'd never even considered County Windows." County Windows has been approached for a comment. County Glass is based next door to County Windows. It's a separate company and is unaffected.
Ready for that? Yeah. Yes. Thank you, Richard. Claire?
Rishi Sunak speaks to party members at event in city. One of the hopefuls in the contest to become the new Conservative Party leader and Prime Minister of the United Kingdom was in Winchester on Sunday morning, July 31st. Rishi Sunak spoke to fellow party members at Winchester Golf Academy at an event organised by Winchester MP Steve Brine. Posting to Facebook, Mr. Brine said, "It was a masterclass in positive vision and grasp of the detail I want from my Prime Minister. I reminded everyone we have a responsibility to ask as many other non-party members as possible who they prefer before we vote, and how crucial it is to remember we, the people who work with the candidates every day, consistently put Rishi ahead in our ballot. We did that for a reason." Allies of Rishi Sunak have insisted there's everything to play for in the race for number 10, dismissing claims that he is now lagging far behind rival Liz Truss. The Tory leadership hopefuls have unveiled a ream of new policies on a crunch weekend to win over party members before ballots start landing on their doorsteps this week.
Sorry. Thank you, Claire. Thousands of fish die in lake. Disaster struck at a fishery near Winchester as thousands of fish, including carp, died from a sudden oxygen crash. Staff at Fisher's Pond in Colden Common were left facing a clean-up operation after fish in the main growing pond fell foul of the scorching conditions on July the 20th. The lake was stocked with expensive specimen carp, due to be sold in the coming years, alongside several other types of fish. Images of the fish floating on the lake's surface were circulating on social media. The pictures also showed John Patton, who has owned the business since 1976, wading in the water to collect some of the carcasses. A post on the business's Facebook page said, "Last Wednesday, our main growing pond suffered a serious oxygen loss, which resulted in the death of a number of fish, including carp, being grown on to be sold as £20 and £30 during the winter of 2023-24 and 24-25. Customers who have already placed orders for large fish to be delivered this coming winter should not be affected. Customers planning to order large fish for the season 23-24 are asked to contact us after January 23. If you have any queries, please do just give us a call. It is understood that the oxygen crash can occur when atmospheric pressure falls rapidly. This typically happens during stormy conditions, which follow a heat wave, as oxygen diffuses from the water into the air, heaping a large amount of stress onto the fish. It is not thought to be a common occurrence." Excuse me. "In this instance, the only resolution is to try and get as much oxygen back into the water as possible. And in some cases, the Environment Agency will help with this." However, the body said it wasn't aware of the tragedy. The spokesperson said, "We have not received any reports of a fish kill at this private fishery, but we encourage people to notify us of any distressed or dead fish via our 24-hour telephone incident hotline." Excuse me. "Fish are susceptible to pollution, prolonged dry or warm weather, and fish disease. Our fisheries team are available 24/7 to respond to fishery incidents. These staff are trained to use aeration equipment and provide expert management advice to help restore dissolved oxygen levels and reduce potential risks and escalation. In extreme cases and where it doesn't pose additional risks, the Environment Agency will rescue and transfer fish to a safe environment." Please.
"A court order against a man obsessed with an actress. Magistrates have taken action against a Winchester stalker obsessed with celebrity Billy Piper. A 4-year stalking protection order has been placed on Philip Jerome, 44, of Fifields Road, Highcliffe. Magistrates in Portsmouth heard that Jerome has been a subject of a restraining order made by North London Magistrates Court in February 2018. He has breached that order, the court was told. The court heard that Jerome's conduct had caused Doctor Who star Billy Piper serious alarm and distress, writing a letter explaining his fixation and obsession with the victim, visiting her home and going to her front door, leaving her feeling unsafe. Under the new order, he is banned from the entire postcode of Northwest 1 in London and must wear an electronic tag which will alert the police if he enters that area. Magistrates told Jerome if he breaches the order, he risks going to prison."
Vara, Richard, please.
Yes, well, we haven't heard about this for a little while, have we? COVID patients is my item. The number of COVID patients in three Hampshire hospitals remains above 100, according to the latest figures. Hampshire Hospitals NHS Foundation Trust had 124 patients on Monday, August the 1st, 53 at Basingstoke, 63 at Winchester and 8 at Andover. That compares to 90 across the three sites on June the 24th. Most are unvaccinated.
Yes.
Should Claire.
Boys play rugby despite injury risk. More than three quarters of boys in Winchester are compelled to play rugby despite high risk of injury, a new study shows. New research has shown boys in state-funded secondary schools feel pressured to play the sport within the physical education curriculum. Contact rugby has a high risk of injury and concussion, yet new research led by the University of Winchester, Oxford Brookes University and the University of Newcastle has shown boys in state-funded secondary schools are compelled to play. A Freedom of Information Act request to schools found that contact rugby is a compulsory activity in over three quarters of state-funded secondary schools for boys. The study, led by Dr. John Batten from the University of Winchester, Dr. Adam J. White from Oxford Brookes University, and Professor Alison Pollock from Newcastle University, also found that 67% of subject leaders believed contact rugby had the highest risk of harm in the physical education curriculum. Dr. White, senior lecturer at Oxford Brookes University and executive director at head injury charity Concussion Legacy Foundation, said, "We know that full contact rugby carries a high risk of injury and particularly concussion that has a potential for long-term health problems. There are many non-contact versions of rugby that provide the same benefits for children but without the same harms."
Thank you, Claire. Now, last news item is headed Plans for Future of City Centre Park. Potential improvements to a Winchester playground have been open for discussion, with plans to make the area more accessible and better suited to its users. Winchester City Council has revealed the findings from public consultations on the development of Abbey Gardens Playground. Over 300 questionnaires were completed at the playground in the Broadway and online, reflecting what children and their parents want to see from the playground's refurbishment. Councillor Charles Radcliffe, who led the call for feedback on Facebook, has now revealed the findings from the recent consultations. Results have been summarised in an infographic that illustrates how people answered. A new slide tops the list of requests, followed by a multi-play area, vehicles to climb on, a cradle swing and a climbing frame. Other suggestions included ideas for making the play area more accessible for children with disabilities and special needs and for creating links with nearby nature. Extra bins, picnic tables and benches were also on the list. Last year, the City Council agreed improvements to 9 Winchester playgrounds and routine maintenance to a further 15. As a popular playground in the city, some £230,000 has been budgeted for the refurbishment of Abbey Gardens, more than double the cost originally proposed in the Town Forum in June 2021. Well, I'm sorry to say that's all we have for you this week. But before we go, another reminder that Liz Legris is the person to call if you have any problems with your recording. Her contact number, again, is on the key fob attached to the memory stick. Thanks to all our support teams for the editing, preparation and dispatch of this edition. And, of course, many thanks to our readers. Vara?
Goodbye.
Richard?
Goodbye.
And Claire?
Bye.
And from me, Peter, until next time, goodbye. Don't forget to put the memory stick in the wallet when you are finished with it and return it to us as soon as possible. Thank you.